Now we move to item N, which is on our, was scheduled for 2:35. It's our, no, I'm sorry, 2:55, AOC restructuring policy 8.9, working remotely, that is telecommuting, the pilot program, the one-year update. Thank you, Judge Jar.
Item N, is there anyone here going to make public comment on item N? No one has indicated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief, and good morning. This is the one-year report to the council called for by the council in a series of actions taken by the council that began with its acceptance of the Strategic Evaluation Committee report and conversion of one of the recommendations in the report to a council directive in August of 2012. Specifically to require the administrative director to ensure that the agency adhered to the then existing policy 8.9. Joining me this morning is Ken Couch, director of the HR office, whose office has become central to the administration of the new telecommute program, which was adopted by the council a year ago on a pilot basis. He will certainly be available to answer questions, if questions are posed concerning the administration of the new program over the last year. As mentioned, in August of 2012, the council followed the recommendation of the Strategic Evaluation Commission report calling for immediate adherence to the program. I had actually begun my work informally as of August, and one of my first jobs of work was to review the telecommute policy that then existed, and I was struck by its imprecision. There were facets to the so-called regular telecommute policy that was authorized that were indefinite. There also existed an ad hoc element to the policy that had absolutely no structure whatsoever. The Strategic Evaluation Commission had observed that there were instances in which a number of administrative office employees were telecommuting far more frequently than they were working in the office place. And as I studied and restudied the then existing policy, I recognized that that was certainly something that was possible and still consistent with the policy because of its indefiniteness. So it was my view that the first step that should be taken is that the policy be redrawn to have much more clear and definite contours. It appears that the council's view on that also moved in that direction because in December of 2012, the council asked the administrative director to consider the proposal of amendments, which we were already working on, and then not too much later, the council directed that I also consider recommending alternatives to a telecommute policy, including an alternative of terminating the policy. A proposed replacement of policy was presented to the council at its meeting on February last year, and by that time I had schooled myself in this subject matter, about which I knew next to nothing as a trial court judge in an environment where telecommuting was really an unknown activity, and I think that's true in most trial courts in our state. I can't obviously speak for the other institutions of the branch, but it was a new matter for me, and I was surprised during my education to learn that the legislature and the federal legislature had commended telecommuting as an appropriate workplace activity, and indeed 20 years ago, California's legislature encouraged its use in appropriate settings as a tool for enhancing productivity. The literature on the subject revealed that there is a natural tension between advantages and disadvantages to telecommuting. Assuming for the sake of discussion that the kind of work that a particular employee does lends itself to remote working or telecommuting. That has been demonstrated in the scholarship to enhance productivity, presumably because of the absence of distractions. But the tension is created because workplace innovation is the product of cross-pollination, of interaction. And by having the isolated workplace environment enhance productivity, it also impedes innovation. So that's a further consideration employers must take into account, once again, depending on the mission of the entity that's considering telecommuting and the kinds of work that the folks within that entity do. When the matter was brought forward to the council, after debate, it was determined that the proposed replacement policy should be adopted, but not adopted without restriction. It was ultimately the will of this body to adopt it as a pilot program only, to operate for a year with outcomes to be reported to the council through the executive and planning committee at 6 months, and then at a one-year interval here, which is where we are today. During that one-year period of time, the policy that this body adopted as a pilot program, I modified in several particulars, and the report lays that out. The regular telecommute policy is not available for people who are managers or are supervisors, on the strength of the notion that managing and supervising is a hands-on workplace activity and is compromised if done remotely. I expanded that, or if you will, made it more strict to include people who have lead responsibility who aren't technically speaking managers or supervisors. Also, I recognized that I had fallen prey to an oversight in the drafting of the replacement policy by not considering the impact of the application of the program on part-time workers, folks who are employed on a part-time basis by agreement, who themselves then seek to telecommute, remove themselves from the workplace yet additional time beyond those days that they're not there because they're part-time workers. And so I declined requests for part-time workers to participate. Also, those whose work required general supervision were declined participation categorically, and it was made more clear than the policy, the pilot policy perhaps, articulated that the administrative director would at any time have the right to suspend a person's participation. Renewals also, to the extent approved in the first instance, would be required on an annual basis of all regular telecommuting program participants. And finally, it was agreed that our HR office should review all the approvals after the classification and compensation study produces a new classification system in our agency for obvious reasons. Just as a refresher, the previous program that was replaced by the pilot program had two components, as noted, a regular and an ad hoc telecommuting opportunity. The regular program previously authorized a person with the approval of his or her supervisor and office the opportunity to telecommute up to 8 days per month, and it provided that the office could also grant exceptions beyond the 8 days. The present pilot program, instead of 8 days per month, confers a maximum of 1 day per week. The previous program had no feedback loop or controls. There was no requirement that there be, for example, work logs presented to the supervisor, let alone to our HR office. The current pilot program requires work logs be prepared and presented by employees who telecommute, and those are audited, in effect, by the supervisor and also by our HR office. The previous program authorized approval of telecommuting privilege at the office level, but didn't have a higher level oversight or review process either in the HR office or in the executive office, as a consequence of which, of course, there was bound to be variability in terms of how the program was applied from office to office. The current pilot program has a multi-part process for approval of telecommuting, which first engages the office that supervises the applicant employee and then engages the HR office. Those factors are summarized at the bottom of page 7 and the top of page 8 of the report. Essentially, there are various factors that the office supervisor must take into account before deciding whether he or she will propose approval of an applicant's application to telecommute, and then the HR office performs an additional and separate analysis before the request to telecommute is sent to me. This last year, as the report reveals, some 100 applications were initially submitted, 69 were initially approved. I think that the number has gone up and down since then, and we currently have some 65 individuals who are presently authorized to telecommute in the regular program, as compared with something like 98 at the conclusion of the operation of the previous program. The number of telecommuting days translates to about 260 days per month, whereas the previous program logged something more like 450. The old program had an ad hoc feature, which enabled an employee's supervisor to authorize telecommuting on an ad hoc basis. There were no limitations placed on the use of the program in the previous model. There was no mechanism for accounting for who sought it, who got it, and for what durations, and for how much of their work week. No data was collected. We simply have no record of how it worked. The new program provides, as I believe everyone is aware, that people who telecommute on an ad hoc basis, that is to say, to address exigent circumstances or unpredictable circumstances, may only do so up to 2 days per month in any circumstance if approved by their supervisor. Moreover, people who are already approved for the regular telecommuting program may not ad hoc telecommute in any circumstance. There are no regular participants, in other words. In addition, the use of ad hoc telecommuting is logged, and our HR office reviews those approved telecommuting opportunities to ensure compliance with the purposes behind ad hoc telecommuting. We have before you a series of charts or displays, and you will see that the regular telecommuting program summary is contained in Table 1 on page 4. The experience in the ad hoc telecommuting program is identified in Table 2 on page 5, although there is a separate table associated with the three unusual events that occurred, the two BART strikes and the Bay Bridge closure that the ad hoc telecommuting program was utilized for as well. I suppose I should emphasize that Tables 2 and 3 do not have an equivalent from the period before the new program was adopted, because there was simply no data collection whatsoever that addressed the telecommuting experience on an ad hoc basis beforehand. Curiously, although only a small fraction of the employees of the administrative office are telecommuting in the regular program, and a great number of employees are categorically disqualified from even applying for the regular program, the feedback that I've gotten from staff, many of whom are not qualified and could never be considered for regular telecommuting, is of great support for the program and of those who are approved for telecommuting. So it is, on that note, I suppose, an interesting phenomenon within the agency that the program is broadly supported, even though it is only applied to a small number. I'd submit to you that, well, it certainly took a while for me to get my arms around the notions supporting telecommuting, that it is a sound business practice if properly applied and prudently overseen, that it is one that makes our agency more competitive, especially since the bulk of our employees work in the San Francisco Bay Area, where telecommuting in many occupations is a very common phenomenon. In fact, as everyone knows and as I learned, the private sector authorizes telecommuting at higher volumes and has for years than the public sector, notwithstanding the statement of public policy support for the telecommuting by public employees in appropriate circumstances. I suggest and commend that our HR office has done a fine job in consulting in a constructive and positive way with the offices and the agency as they have adapted to the new program and has responsibly overseen the program to ensure that it was properly administered this year for your consideration. There are four recommended potential outcomes at this juncture. I'm respectfully requesting that at this juncture, the council embrace the present rule as further restricted by the steps that I took during this year's period as interlineated on, I think, your fifth attachment, which is the rule that you adopted as a pilot rule with proposed additional changes, and suggest also that should you have any questions of me or of Ken Couch, that we're more than happy to respond.
Yes, Judge Elias.
I have a couple questions. You said there was something like 65 or 69 people telecommuting currently?
On the general, regular program.
But on the sheet it says there are 85. Is that a mistake, or what happened to those other people? Page 2 of where it says current status, is there 85 regular employees?
I'll defer to Ken.
Table on page 2 in my binder shows current status 85.
You may be looking at a report that is an earlier report. We provided the initial report that you saw at your February meeting, and then we provided a follow-on report we did to the Executive and Planning Committee 6 months into the program. The current numbers are set out at the bottom of page 3 of the present report before you today for your consideration, which shows that I think that the number is presently 65.
Judge, I think you're looking at the memo from Judge Starr's presentation February of 2013.
You. Then I have another question.
Sorry for the confusion.
That's okay.
It said current,
and I thought I was current.
Well, we also had the old rule, the rule that the council adopted, and then finally the proposed rule for your consideration that represents the adopted pilot policy with proposed additional changes, so it is a bit confusing.
I guess my other question is, the people that are telecommuting, if they're not managers, supervisors, or lead, I'm just curious, what do they do that they can do it at home? Like the IT people, what can they do that they're doing at home?
Ken actually amalgamated those things from the work logs, and there are several subject matter areas that recur over and over again, and I believe that that's laid out in the report. Ken?
Yes, at page 4 of the report,
the
most common reported tasks from the work logs submitted by the employees to the supervisor and then reviewed by HR are listed on page 4. But essentially, you have to be able to do at home what you could do at work.
So what is that?
Research, if you're a research attorney, you can do that kind of stuff at home. Some IT work, if you're drafting or preparing reports or memorandum, you can do that at home.
So they're not working on equipment?
No.
There are 6 bullet items near the bottom of page 4, and they summarize the most common tasks that are authorized and performed.
Judge Jackson and Judge Rubin.
Okay. 6 months ago, at the EMP, I expressed some concerns about the ad hoc telecommuting during the transit troubles. And frankly, you're across the street, we had our people come to work. Now, granted, it was going to be difficult with the BART strike and the Bay Bridge closure. And I even had to commute in and had to start earlier. So I'm a little concerned. I support telecommuting, but when it comes to the BART strike, Bay Bridge closure, AC strike, or whatever the case may be, that is a little troubling when everybody else had to come to work.
The only way that I can respond to that is that, first of all, people weren't given a day off without either having to take it as a vacation day or being approved in advance to telecommute because there was work that they were able to take with them home and do all day. I suppose that's the first thing I should mention. We didn't view the program, in other words, as being a surrogate for time off without a charge against vacation time. Ken? I'm sorry, I think I interrupted you.
No, that's all right. And Your Honor, I understand that. If you look at the chart on page 7, you see that the usage in the first BART strike was quite a bit higher than the Bay Bridge closure and the second BART strike. And I think on evaluation of what was made available during the first strike, and I think it was a very short notice, I think the judge and the executive office determined that for the Bay Bridge closure and the BART strike, there would be no expansion of the ad hoc. You could either alter your work day and work week with permission of your supervisor, or if you were otherwise eligible and had not exceeded your two ad hoc days, those were available per policy. So I think after the evaluation of the first one, when we saw the usage pretty high at 168, I think the judge made the policy determination that we would not expand the ad hoc for the second and third event.
I just wanted to second, this is Frank McGuire, wanted to second what Judge Jackson's concerns were. The AOC obviously shares this building with two courts, the Supreme Court and the First District Court of Appeal, and we have our clerk's offices that have to remain open for business, and it created real sort of morale issues in our clerk's office when they saw rather liberal telecommuting being allowed for people who weren't sort of in customer service positions, and they had to somehow find a way to make it in from Antioch to staff our clerk's office counter. We were able to do some staggering of work hours, again, sort of on an ad hoc basis to basically allow people to stagger their work hours so that we could adequately cover things. But I just think it's not really a complaint. It's just that I think we need to be sensitive that we're all sharing workspace and that what's done in one agency can be perceived in certain ways by the courts and particularly by our customer service employees who don't have the same flexibility in their schedules.
Judge Rubin, then Judge Baker.
I just had a question either for Judge Jarre or for Ken, which is what of the 700 and some odd employees at the AOC, what percentage were eligible for telecommuting?
For the regular program?
Right.
I don't know whether we have I don't know that we've
computed that, but you know, the 719 odd regular positions, if you eliminate supervisor and above and then anyone in a lead capacity, it certainly drops the number down quite a bit. I don't know. I don't think we computed that number, did we, Mike? Yeah, we didn't compute that number. We figured it as a percentage of the total available employees rather than the ones that were eligible based on the judge's policy interpretation of the original one where it did not specifically exclude leads. That added quite a few more people that were not eligible to participate. But the answer to your question was I don't have that figure right now.
Right. After Judge Baker, Judge Wacom.
Thank you, Chief. Very thorough report. I see this as essentially a management issue. This is a valuable tool for the director to have in his toolbox, whether it's utilized or not depends upon factors that we can't possibly predict at this time. The BART strike and the closure of the Bay Bridge are two good examples. But I think, given the financial crisis that we've been dealing with and given our dedication to access to justice, I think this is just a tool that we can't live without. And I think all the appropriate safeguards are set forth in the report, so I would move that we adopt option one.
Second. Second by Judge O'Malley. We still have further discussion.
Yes, please.
Judge Walkup and Judge Rosenberg and Judge Brandlin.
Thank you, Chief. Just a question and a comment. First of all, I think the pilot program has been good to the extent that Judge Jarre has been able to manage and sort of get a handle on what's been going on with telecommuting. But in terms of the options before the council, it just seems to me in terms of timing with the classification study coming down the pike, that's going to change a lot of things. And it just seems to me that maybe option two would be a preferable option, which is to basically walk gingerly, take this program on a pilot basis for another year, see what classification does to this organization before the pilot program was locked in. So that's my first comment. My second one is this. There's a range of alternatives from approving the pilot program to make it a permanent program all the way down to eliminating all forms of telecommuting. But I actually thought there was another option that may be considered, and I don't mean this in a facetious manner at all, but what about a pilot program at some point where telecommuting is eliminated for a short period of time, 6 months to a year, so that if there was a true interest in weighing telecommuting effects on the organization versus no telecommuting, we would have some data, we'd have some information and some experience to make that kind of a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg.
Thank you, Chief. To be very frank, I'm of two minds on this subject. On the one hand, I must say that I'm not a great believer in telecommuting. I know from the trial court perspective, there's very, very little, if any, telecommuting. We're all about customer service on the front lines, and we're there. So I think it rankles a number of people at the trial courts to see telecommuting at any great extent at the AOC. On the other hand, I agree with Judge Baker that this is ultimately a management issue. And I think Judge Jarre and the staff have done a pretty darn good job in trying to get their arms around it and studying it and determining what is best for what is best for the organization. And I do believe Judge Jarre has taken control of the situation. We now see less than 10% of the employees in the regular program. Is that too high? Is that too low? I don't know. But I will say this. I supported this originally, notwithstanding my misgivings, because it was going to be a one-year pilot program, and we would have a much better understanding of it. I'm of the mind to support the concept proposed by Judge Walkup to extend it, option two. So I'm prepared to vote in favor of option two to essentially give another year of analysis.
Judge Brandley.
Yes. First, I wanted to say that this plan is a far better plan, more reasoned than the previous plan was, which was largely without limit. Having said that, when we put this over as a pilot project, what we were looking for was a business plan. Does this really help the branch? My concern is that if we're not adequately funded, we're going to have future contractions, particularly at the trial court level, and you just have an appearance issue. You know, if you have AOC employees that can telecommute and you have trial court employees that are being discharged because we can't pay them. Having said that, I want to make sure that I'm clear here. This is not a reflection on our ADOC. There are very few judges in this state that have the skill set as Judge Jarre to be able to step into the position that he has done very well. I personally am also of the mindset that telecommuting under certain circumstances is a very beneficial program. When I served on the appellate court for about 15 months, it's used very frequently there and it works very well there. But at the trial court level, obviously, it doesn't work. And I would support the comments of both Judge Walker, Judge Rosenberg, to put it over for another year.
Justice Hall.
Thank you, Chief. This follows on with Judge Brandlin's comment just now, and I think there's an indication here of the value of telecommuting depending on the task at hand. As Judge Brandlin points out, and as has been my experience at the Court of Appeal, I had a chambers attorney who, for years, until he retired, telecommuted twice a week, or 2 days a week, and the one of the two I have now is doing the same thing, and there was absolutely no drop-off in productivity because they were doing research and writing and things that one can do as well at home. And it's unique to the appellate courts in a way because the chamber's attorneys and the staff attorneys work pretty much independently. But I think that it leads me to agree with the comment that this is a management tool that apparently... Well, obviously, Judge Jarre and Mr. Couch have gotten a handle on. The question I would have, and I doubt that I can expect an answer other than anecdotal, but is there any feedback at all from supervisors and such looking at the tasks, at the bullet marks on page four, if there's any drop-off in production or any concern that the people who are allowed to telecommute who perform these tasks are not doing so as well from home as they could here at the building?
Your Honor, there's been no comments or reports from supervisors in that aspect to HR. If there had been, we would have addressed that and probably recommended to Judge Jar that the regular telecommuting be removed. The idea behind the program is you are supposed to be able to do at home as efficiently and effectively what you could normally do at work on a limited basis. And in fact, the opposite is true. What we get is requests to expand the telecommute program to more people on more days. And of course, that's an easy answer for HR because the answer is no. But we've got no reports that the effectiveness of regular telecommuters have been diminished at all.
Thank you. I think that the last thought that I would have is, and speaking as all of us do only from our own experiences, one of the values of allowing limited telecommuting, as I have in my chambers and others have, is I doubt that the two attorneys that I have allowed to do that, on the condition that they keep up with their work, I doubt that they would have accepted my offer to work with me. And so there is an aspect to it of again, it's a management aspect to this that I think requires some flexibility. And so that's a consideration also. Yes. Thank you.
Justice Hull, if I might just add to that, as everyone is aware, painfully, I know our population in the agency, when you consider regular employees, temporary employees, contract employees, agency temps, has shifted from around 1,100 2-3 years ago to about 800. The tasks, however, have not been reduced or minimized, as a consequence of which all directors, all managers, and all supervisors have a great deal on their plates that has to be done, and it has to be done timely. Quite plainly, at least logic dictates to me that were there some drop-off in productivity, those supervisors who require that work product in a timely fashion would react vigorously if the program appeared to them to be reducing their folks' outputs.
Judge Jacobson, then Judge McCabe, then Judge O'Malley, and then Judge Walker.
I'm in favor of option one. I agree with Judge Baker's comments wholeheartedly. It seems to me that it doesn't feel appropriate to me for us to be deciding this issue. This is Judge Jar's decision. If Judge Jar messes this up, then I think he needs to answer to the council. So if we have a big problem here in terms of how he's managing the AOC, I think he needs to answer for that. But I think we do need to give him space to run his organization in an appropriate way. If I had a vote, I would cast it in favor of option one.
Judge McKay.
Thank you, Chief. The topic was interesting when sitting on the SEC. I, like many of you and Judge Jar, had a very faint familiarity with the subject, so started reading, learning a little bit about it. Then brushed up last year as we discussed this issue again, pulled up another online issue regarding this. It's no wonder that we're grappling with the issue because it's tied to the information age and, relatively speaking, compared to the agriculture age and industrial age, the information age is in its infancy, and so is telecommuting. It's an issue tied directly to technology, and it's what we are going through is similar to the private sector. Yahoo and Best Buy have banned it, but the majority have embraced it. And according to a group called JobFlex, estimate the executive officer that telecommuting has grown since 2012 to the present by about 118% in the private sector. And, you know, Yahoo eliminated it because, number one, their view really was we're losing creativity because people walking down the hall and standing near the water cooler were coming up with some really great ideas, and that doesn't exist when you're telecommuting. And so they were worried about speed and quality being affected, and therefore they banned it, so they can get everybody together physically. So that's the rationale, and make no mistake why they were doing it. They, I didn't read anything in here that they thought that people were abusing it, the system, or anything like that. Next, I note that it was estimated that retail increased telecommuting by 85.04%, travel and hospitality 68.18%, medical and health 64.16%, insurance 51.78%, bilingual sales and services 49.43%. And again, that was quoted by the executive director of FlexJobs to give due credit. So I put that out there noting that this is an arena and an area where reasonable minds can differ simply because the industry doesn't know what the answer is yet. We're living through it. Judiciary, being government, obviously is different than the private sector because we are primarily service-based. And so how does that fit into the mix being there for people to access the government and particularly the judiciary? When I'm looking through the criteria, you know, performance measures, you know, that's the one thing I'm looking here. Okay, you talk about ability to handle multiple priorities, timeliness. You're looking at characteristics about the employee themselves before approval, and then afterwards talk about issues about their work. But the performance measure is a little fuzzy to me. I'm consistent with last time, I thought telecommuting is a good idea, and it should be used in a structured way, but in a demonstrated need. I believe that the morale issues that were talked by Frank at the court, Judge Jackson at the San Francisco court, and others are legitimate concerns that we should be looking at. Maybe Judge Walkup is right. Maybe this is an issue where we should look at it a little longer, but I don't think it's appropriate to pull the plug on it. I think that's not an option for us. I think we should just continue to look at data and continue to allow the ADOC to manage. In response to some of the comments about that this is a tool for the ADOC should do that, you know, the hair in the back of my neck goes up a little simply because we're deferring to the ADOC. It's no knock on the ADOC, but ADOC's, you're not going to be here forever, right? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, and maybe you are.
Subjectively or objectively.
Yeah. And it reminds me of those debates when, you know, back in the 80s in the Reagan administration, they're trying to change all the rules and constitutional amendments, and as soon as he's out, the next president is, the same people arguing those things have now completely taken the exact opposite. Oh, this is Terry. We can't do... I think this is the policy board. Our job is to issue policy. I don't think we should take a pass. I think we should be here as an aid to provide some direction to the ADOC. On the other hand, I don't want to handcuff the ADOC and tell you don't have this available to you. I think you should continue to do it. I hope as I've rambled on that you can tell, I just don't know enough about its impact on the organization as a whole and its residuals and whether or not we should adopt it openly and just revisit it later, or we should do it on a temporary basis by extending it. So with that definite maybe, thank you, Chief.
Judge O'Malley, then Judge Walkup, then Mr. Bonino, then Mr. Fox.
Well, I don't think that my colleague, Judge Baker, meant that we take a pass on it. He and I both agree that Judge Jarre has really overseen this area. In fact, it's been under a microscope for the last year, and they've been really collecting as much data as they can, the number of employees, the types of situations, and so now we're here for this recommendation. I believe that number one and number two are similar Number one might have a little more short permanence to it than number two. If the class and comp study changes things, and you've adopted number one because we think number one is going to work, at least in its present capacity, and studying it for another year is probably not going to change the written policy that's been very thoroughly changed and gone over and viewed and examined. If the class and comp changes it, then Judge Jarre will have to bring a change to us with regard to that. If anything, it's just going to change the number of employees that are available. It's not really going to change the policy. So I would ask that we adopt number one, and if for some reason class and comp does change it as opposed to the number of people that might be eligible or not eligible for the policy as written, then it can be changed. But I think setting this off another year is really not going to change much other than we're just going to revisit it very similarly in another year. And it doesn't mean that it can't be changed if something comes up that's not appropriate. This is still on the radar. We have a good ADOC who's very sensitive to this issue. In fact, was resistant when he first came on about the issue because, again, trial court work does not lend itself for telecommuting. The work of the employees at the AOC, like the work of the employees in the Attorney General's office, like the work of employees who are appellate defense attorneys and so forth, it does lend itself quite well to that type of work. So we shouldn't be offended by it. It's just another way for them to do it. It's not what we've seen, and it's not how we work or we have operated because we're in court every day. Our employees are at the windows or in court every day or getting files every day, and you can't do that from home. So, again, there's nothing offensive about it. It's just different, and it's as effective. And the productivity of the work has not declined as far as I can see here. I think Mr. Couch and Judge Jarre would have been very sensitive to a decline in the value of the work. I certainly haven't seen it with regard to the work that I've seen that's come from the employees of the AOC. So I would adopt number one. And again, as the ADOC, if it needs to be revised because of certain changes of things that come up, then it, as well as any other policy that's adopted by the AOC, can be revisited.
Judge Walker, Mr. Bonino, Mr. Fox, and then Commissioner Alexander.
Thanks, Chief. And first, thanks for encouraging a robust discussion with divergent viewpoints. If I had the opportunity, I would respectfully like to make a substitute motion, which would be to adopt option number two. In addition to the reasons I stated earlier, I think it would provide the administrative director with a more complete opportunity to analyze the impacts of the policy on the organization and to come up with a little more data and information so that the council, before adopting this policy on a permanent basis, would be more fully informed. So that would be my substitute motion.
I'll second the substitute motion.
And since, and I understand that, but since there are people who have not spoken yet on either, and because we've had repeat discussions, I'm going to call on Mr. Bonino, Mr. Fox, and then Commissioner Alexander, and then Judge Nadler. And not seeing, I think by then almost everyone has spoken. Then I'm going to call for the substitute motion first, unless there's a substitute.
Thank you, Chief.
I haven't spoken, Chief. So.
You on the floor. No.
I'll tell the jokes here.
Telecommuting rankles me, but so does the fact that lawyers don't use books anymore and lawyers show up in the office without wearing ties. And it happened, and that's, things have changed, unfortunately. And as many of you have learned this morning, the traffic in the Bay Area, and I'm sure in the Sacramento area and definitely the Los Angeles area, has become a true nightmare. And as a result, I know the customer service people, unfortunately, have to be at their jobs. But everyone else pretty much is telecommuting when and if they can, including some of the people around this table, as I understand it, including me. So it's something, as long as there are reasonable rules, and Judge Jarre has come up with a number of reasonable rules, and as long as we don't have a repeat of some of the extreme situations, which would be ruled out by the reasonable rules that Judge Jarre has come up with that caused a lot of the political and publicity hubbub that we had a year ago, this is really an idea whose time has come, and I think the Judicial Council should accept option one.
Thank you, Mr. Bonino. Mr. Fox.
Yes, thank you, Chief. I will be voting in opposition to the substitute motion and in support of the original motion. I would suggest, however, that we consider requiring an annual report from the ADOC. There's no further reason, I don't think, to maintain a pilot project. I think that it has been shown to work. I think that the report reflects that the ADOC has imposed limits and restrictions. It's working. There is a high level of productivity with a lesser number of staff. And so I would suggest that we expect an annual report on the continued success. If we ultimately conclude that it is no longer working, we modify the policy.
I second that substitute.
Which is back to Baker's motion.
With an annual update.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is an evolving and fluid discussion.
Can the original motion, maker of the motion simply just adopt and get rid of the substitute?
I'm just going to think out loud before the parliamentarian speaks. Yes, that's one option. It could also be construed as a substitute motion, but substitute times two.
It's, if I may, Chief,
yes.
What was just suggested would either be considered an amendment to the original motion,
right.
Or a better approach would be if the maker of the original motion and the seconder simply adopt that as a friendly amendment. Right. Then we don't have a lot of motions on the floor.
I would accept that.
Okay, so would I.
So the original motion has been
amended.
Changed.
However, the substitute motion will be handled first. But I
correct.
Haven't yet heard from Commissioner Alexander and Judge Nadler, and Justice Miller is starting to smile.
I don't want to repeat what everybody else has said. If I could vote, I would vote for option one. I have had contact with the AOC in only a limited capacity with CFCC and CJR. And both of those have significant amount of staff that can do a lot of their work not at the office. And some of them and some of the management people have said to me that it has reduced productivity with having to be in the office, because with all the report writing that many members of the AOC have to do, and I think we do 100-something reports to the legislature every year, that they can do that much more efficiently at home when they're not distracted. So that's one thing. And the other thing is there are some jobs at the trial court that could be telecommuted. We have an IT center. They happen to come in and sit at a desk at an IT center, but when I call and my computer's broken down, they don't come out and see me anymore. They hone in and however they do it, and take control of my computer, and they fix it long distance, and I never see that person. And that person could do that from anywhere. We have researchers at work. We have people that prep calendars that spend a day or two prepping a week's worth of calendar that can do that and then report back. We have probate examiners that are looking at documents that are all on the internet now and can do that and send their report to their judge. So there are jobs at the trial courts that could be telecommuted and be done just as effectively. They just aren't the face-to-face service jobs, and the face-to-face service jobs at the AOC are not being telecommuted either.
Without taking too much time and restating what's been stated, I'd like to, first of all, agree that option one seems most reasonable to me. And I do appreciate that looking at it at the end of a year would be a good idea. I think there's a very good reason why businesses have been adopting the policy of remote work assignments. I think it wouldn't happen in the private sector if it did not promote productivity, increase productivity, and I think the same is true for the courts, maybe not for those that work at the counter, maybe not for those that face the public on a daily basis, but we have so many people that work otherwise. And I'd like to express my confidence in Judge Jarr and his staff to act reasonably and appropriately in allowing that to occur.
Thank you, Judge Nadler. So at this time, Justice Miller, and then Judge D'Alba, who promises
And I apologize, but I did want to say that I personally believe in telecommuting. I think Judge Jarre and Ken Couch and your staff have done an excellent job in crafting a policy. I think it works. I think that it's been effective. And I kind of feel like we're all now, whatever, how many motions we have, substitute motions, are saying the same thing. But I do believe that it's important, and I'm interested finally to know what the actual motion is so that I can decide whether to vote on it. But I do believe we should have an annual report, whether it's called a pilot program or not, an annual report. And I do think it's important, because of the class and comp study, that we have the opportunity as a council to look at what that class and comp study says, and for Judge Jarre and Ken Couch to report back to us as to how it impacts the Judicial Council staff agency in its entirety and the telecommute policy. And I agree with Judge McCabe, too, though, that I think in our annual report it would be nice to add some kind of a performance evaluation to for you to certify to us in some way that it is working and that it is effective, and that the managers and supervisors are finding that they are as productive or more productive, and for us to be able to see that and get our hands around it. So if I've said what everyone else has said and that's the same for motion, then I'm in support of that.
Okay. Judge D'Alba.
Thank you, Chief. My comment's a little bit different. It doesn't go to the policy. I just want to compliment Justice Miller and my colleagues on EMP for agreeing to put this agenda item on the discussion calendar today so that we can have this robust discussion publicly. Thank you.
Thank you. Well said and relevant. Before we take the substitute motion first, the substitute motion that's been made and seconded recommends that we adopt recommendation number 2, which is extend the current pilot telecommute program an additional year. We will do a roll call vote on that, and I ask Judge Jarre to start the roll call.
Can I ask a question, though? What is the first? I need to know what the first motion is.
The main motion. The main motion is option 1.
Yeah, option 1.
The substitute motion is option 2.
With an annual review.
No, that was not a part of the main motion.
No, got a minute. It was amended.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right. It adds your.
It's already been added.
It adds Jim Fox's.
Okay. Add a performance evaluation, though, too.
A report in a year.
I want to include it.
I construe the term performance evaluation as an annual review. And if you like, I'll read for you the language I have of what I would perceive to be the first motion as amended. And that would be to approve the pilot program as a regular telecommute program with the current additional controls for approving, monitoring, and rescinding participation. And require the administrative director to provide an annual performance evaluation of the program. Okay.
So, please proceed with the roll call vote on the substitute motion, which is recommendation number 2.
All right. The record should reflect, and please correct me if I'm in error, as to voting members of the council, Justice Baxter, Assemblymember Bloom, Ms. Davis, and Senator Evans are absent. Hearing no correction, I'll call the roll of voting members at this time. Justice Ashman Gerst.
We're voting now.
On number
this
two,
is,
to adopt two.
No.
Judge Baker.
No.
Mr. Bonino.
No.
Judge Brandlin.
Yes.
Judge D'Alba.
No.
Judge Elias.
No.
Mr. Fox.
No.
Justice Hall?
No.
Judge Jackson?
No.
Justice Miller?
No.
Judge O'Malley?
No.
Mr. Robinson?
No.
Mr. Robinson is, I'll note, absent for the vote. Judge Rosenberg?
Yes.
Judge Rubin?
No.
Judge Stout?
No.
So the
Is Gary a voting member?
Yes.
I beg your pardon. We didn't update. Forgive me. Okay. Judge Nadler.
Yes.
It's never too late. I know.
All right, then. The votes are 2 yes.
3 yes. Well, no, voting members.
And Rosenberg.
No, their advice.
And 13 to 2.
The maker of the motion was a non-voting member.
Right. Correct. So it's 13 to 2. Right.
Correct. So the substitute motion is defeated. Chief, did you wish to proceed with
the Yes, vote? We'll do a roll call vote then on the amended motion, number one, as amended, the original, first, not original.
All right, then, on option one as amended, Judge Nadler.
Yes.
It seemed only fair.
Thank you.
Justice Ashman Gerst.
Yes.
Judge Baker.
Yes.
Mr. Bonino.
Yes.
Judge Brandlin.
No.
Judge D'Alba.
Yes.
Judge Elias.
Yes.
Mr. Fox.
Yes.
Justice Hull.
Yes.
Judge Jackson.
Yes.
Justice Miller.
Yes.
Judge O'Malley.
Yes.
Judge Rosenberg.
Yes.
Judge Rubin.
Yes.
Judge Stout.
Yes.
There are 14 yes votes and one no vote. So as to item N, the motion to support option one as amended carries. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Jarr. We'll stand in recess for 15 minutes or so until 10:30. Then we'll start our introduction to realignment educational agenda. Thank you.